Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Locked On Wolves Podcast for July 11th. Colt Molesky has called his first emergency podcast. We're so proud of him. I'm Tom Schreier, co-founder of ZoneCoverage.com. And with me on the phone today is the man who called the emergency podcast. Colton, what's this podcast all about?
It's about building your team and how you go about building a team, how different organizations have gone about building a team, and maybe what works, what doesn't work, what we would do if we were running a team, because in a perfect world, we have our own team, right?
This is Colton's audition. I want everyone to know, this is Colton's audition to be an NBA GM. This is what this is all about. No, I think
absolutely.
I think it's smart. I think it's good to compare kind of what the Minnesota Timberwolves are doing, since it's so obvious. Which, think of the contrast real quick before we get into kind of what the Wolves are doing and what the rest of the league is doing and comparing and contrasting that. But think of the contrast just between the Wolves kind of like pre-Flip, maybe pre-Adelman, definitely like in the Con era, where I remember writing an article. I believe this was in Flip's first year, and it was just really simple. I'm like, the Wolves have a plan now. Like, this is crazy. This is most teams, you would assume, you know, that's standard practice. You should probably have a plan. But if you remember going back to Kevin Love's article through Yahoo when Wojnarowski was over there in 2012, he had kind of that famous line where he just goes, "Is there a plan? Like, what's the plan?" And so, if anything, I got to imagine, Colton, as someone who's followed this for a while, it's just refreshing to know that the Wolves have a plan going on.
Oh, yeah. And we'll get into this later on in the show. But I think it's easy to take for granted. Not all teams have a plan. I mean, do the Orlando Magic have a plan? Do the New York Knicks have a plan? There's a couple of the teams that look like they're just kind of, every season is like, all right, so what should we do now? What's the plan here?
Overpay Tim Hardaway. That makes sense.
Exactly. Pay Hardaway $71 million. I mean, I might take the old Hardaway Senior for less money than paying $71 million to Hardaway Junior. I mean, am I crazy?
No, I mean, there is some truth to that, and I think sometimes we get caught in our own world here. Where I know some people listening to this are just general NBA fans, just listening, kind of sampling among the network here at Locked On. But you know, for the diehard Wolves fans, and just this is true across all sports. Sometimes you kind of put on lenses and get tunnel vision, and you literally only look at the Wolves and the best run organizations. Now, some teams, and we'll get into this, like Cleveland, not sure they had a plan. Kind of lucky LeBron's from Akron. You know what I mean? Like, not sure they really had a plan. We'll talk about Golden State. I think first-class organization, that's paid off. But even some of these, like the Utahs and the Hornets, I mean, some of these teams, I think, actually have a pretty good idea what they're doing. Utah can't force Gordon Hayward to stay there, right? I mean, that time has kind of passed. And with Charlotte, and you know, it's not quite as egregious as Portland, where they just, like, capped out a bad or whatever, like not great team. With Charlotte, I actually like some of the moves they have and some of the players they have, but like you just know they're not gonna go very far. And then there's other weird circumstances, like all the hype around the Clippers, and they turned out to be kind of a second rounded out. Now we don't know where they're going. So you know, this is why we're doing what we're doing. And Colton nails his first emergency podcast. How about that? You gotta feel good about that.
I feel a little good about it. We'll see how it goes from beginning to end. Maybe people will find out I'm just off my rocker and have been studying too much Justin Patton tape with Alex Berg, but hopefully it goes well. I did want to hit first off drafting. I think there's different styles of drafting. I think the two main ways to go about drafting a team are drafting on need versus drafting on just best available player. And the ways teams kind of come after draft picks and go about drafting the guys that are available and how that fits into free agency, because it is a little awkward drafting before you go after free agents, right? I mean, you're kind of banking on some of these draft picks to pan out when you're selecting certain free agents to pursue. And that feels a little awkward, and I think that has a big effect on how teams draft.
No, completely. I think generally speaking, every, you know, again, and I cover multiple different sports. I don't do football as much as I used to, but I do baseball, you know, right now, and I've done some hockey, and they all say, you know, best available player. And sometimes it's a mask for, we don't want to tell you what our needs are, or we don't want someone to scoop us in the draft, which is fair. In basketball, it seems like, generally speaking, if you're building from scratch, you draft the best available player. We're going to see how this process, you know, how the process works in Philadelphia. But I think those players are assets. And the best example I can think of off the top of my head, and feel free to jump in here if you have more, but for Wolves fans, is O.J. Mayo, I think, was considered the best player in that, or a better player than Kevin Love in that draft. I think McHale just happened to like Kevin Love better. So he took Mayo, flipped him for assets, right, and got Love. I think that's why you always go for the best available, kind of the consensus guy. Unless it's something like Boston this year, where I think they just saw kind of Markelle Fultz and were like, meh, you know, it's a deep draft. There's not a lot on the top. This guy didn't really win in Washington. You know, we'll just move down. But yeah, I mean, what circumstance, other than if you are like an established team drafting later in the draft where you really just kind of, it makes more sense to go for a fit. If you are building from scratch, why wouldn't you just draft the best player available?
Well, I think that there's a little bit of a trap there too, because if you look at a team like the Milwaukee Bucks, they're drafting the best available player, and it's kind of worked out for them. They've gotten Giannis Antetokounmpo, they've gotten Jabari Parker. I think DJ Wilson is going to be a guy that fits in with that system. Thon Maker looks like he could probably fit. Just a bunch of stretch guys that will fit together. But I think you also can fall into the trap where the 76ers end up with Joel Embiid, Nerlens Noel, and Jahlil Okafor on the same team. I mean, those are all the same position.
Right.
And they didn't get end-of-game minutes. And then Nerlens Noel gets shipped off to Dallas for basically nothing.
Yeah, and that even the, was it Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, wasn't he kind of a high pick, and he's kind of bounced around?
Yeah, I believe he was, wasn't he, I think he was like 10 or 11, something like that. Maybe a little lower, but so, he was relatively high as well.
The big issue is that, like, assets just, like, jump up and down in the NBA. Like, you have to factor in not only how valuable is this player, really how valuable is this player perceived to be. That was kind of Flip's line all the time, as he just said, you know before anyone else if this guy's just not good, and in which case you flip him right away to make sure that you're not, you know, kind of left, you know, without anything in the end. I don't know. At the same time, if there are good players there, even if the other teams in the league know that Philadelphia, for example, has to offload them, they're still valuable because there's just very few good players, right? I mean, there's just one NBA player makes a huge difference on their team. And even if you have a weird, you know, this goes back to, you really should, like, running an NBA team is very hard because you really don't want to sit in the middle, because that was kind of Milwaukee forever, right? And you know, even I think Detroit for a while, they didn't want to bottom out, and then they were just kind of 42 win team every year. But bottoming out doesn't guarantee you anything either, because we just know kind of from the process and from other Cleveland, if LeBron doesn't go back, what is Cleveland? They're not, are they a playoff team in the East with Kyrie? Like, without LeBron?
They were a playoff team with Kyrie before LeBron got there.
Yeah. And that's in the East, you know? I mean, it is. So again, I think we should acknowledge right off the bat that, you know, there's no guarantees.
Well, and I think too, the big thing when you're drafting is you've got to have a guy already there. Like, if you're tanking, then you don't have your guy there, so you're just going for raw talent. But if you're actually trying to build a roster, you've got to have your guy. So I think if you look at Boston, I think Boston's a really good example for kind of Boston and the Warriors, kind of what you got to shoot for a little bit, where Isaiah Thomas is their guy. Like his defense or not, like his height or not, he's their guy. He's going to put points. He's going to put points on the board. He's going to knock down shots. He's going to move the ball in transition really well, pick up the pace of the game, or slow it down, whichever way you need it to go. He's a good point guard, finds guys in traffic. He's a good point guard. So now now that you have that guy, you can kind of draft players, and especially in today's NBA, it's a little easier where you can just draft long wing players. And so they draft Marcus Smart, they draft Jaylen Brown, they draft Jason Tatum, and all these guys can kind of score, play defense, and they're all kind of a little bit of a shooting guard to power forward, where if you go small ball, maybe they're one position. If you go play a little bigger, maybe they squeeze into a different spot. So these kind of flux players that can play a little bit of everything and shoot from a little bit everywhere, it's a little easier to draft now, but they're still at the position they're drafting them at. They were probably the best available spot, but they are building around this guy that they've had their hands on. And so that makes it a little easier for the team, so they know they don't have to go after one specific spot to really make the roster.
I think we can agree that the best way to build your team is to take advantage of bad teams, just like disorderly teams, right? You kind of saw this with, like, again, I go back to Cleveland. Like, yes, they won a championship. This is a huge deal. We'll probably have my buddy Chris from Cleveland on at some point to talk about LeBron and his, just kind of get that Cleveland perspective, especially with LeBron potentially heading to LA. But, you know, they're a mess, and I think Flip just waited him out and got who he wanted. He got Wiggins. And, you know, there's an article from a year ago, I think, Brandon Warren, our baseball guy who also really likes basketball, pointed this out on Twitter. There was, like, a CBS article that came out and said, there's no way that, you know, Chicago's going to trade Jimmy Butler without getting Wiggins in return. You know, Chicago's a mess right now. I think we know this. And Tibbs just waited him out and was like, yeah, I'm not giving up Wiggins. I'll wait until you're ready to kind of make a deal here, right? And it took basically a year. And Boston's example 1A, that is the best way to build your organization. I we're going to praise Golden State here in a little bit, and they deserve what they, you know, any praise they get. But if you can take advantage of Brooklyn and do the deal that they made for these aging players that did once, they won in Boston, which was a huge deal. Everyone here knows that because of KG, but huge deal. If you can offload these old players and get a whole bunch of picks and not only rebuild with a whole bunch of top picks, but be winning at the same time in a desirable market that has a ton of basketball history. I mean, number one, do you think that's the best, you know, kind of the best run organization right now? And B, is that just the best situation to be in if you're Brad Stevens and if you, you know, own the Boston Celtics?
I think it is. And obviously the Warriors are such a good organization, but, and I know random sounds bad, but I think the Warriors' success is a little more luck than the Celtics, because let's be honest, drafting Draymond Green that late to get that kind of player, that just doesn't happen all the time. That doesn't right. happen every 10, 15 years. But for Boston, they were able to win a ring, go to make a bunch of playoff pushes after the 2008 championship. They were contending to go to the finals for a solid 4 to 5 years after that. And then after all of that, they're able to offload these older players and then trade them for picks, which is something more sustainable. They took a bunch of first-round picks. So you know, out of all these first-round picks, at least two of them are going to hit and be really good players, be all-star players. And so they did that. And then while they still had some of those guys on the roster, they got younger guys like a Rajon Rondo, who were going to be good, and they kind of built around him a little bit, brought in free agents, got rid of Rajon Rondo, but they had those free agents in there, and then they started hitting on these draft picks, and they started bringing in more free agents, and they did have some smart moves. Getting Isaiah Thomas for what they got him for was a really smart move, and it paid off really well for them. But for the most part, they were just making a bunch of smart moves, trades, and free agency acquisitions to build the roster they have today. And maybe they won't win a championship this year or next year, but they're setting the foundation for a team that's not only going to be contending for a final spot for the next few years, but they actually have a legitimate shot at having a team that will win a finals maybe in 3 or 4 years. And that's, I think, the version of the smartest way to build your NBA team for sustained success. Not just success as long as that free agent stays with your team, or as long is that those couple guys are able to hit their shots for the next few years. That's sustained success over a decade.
Yeah, no, makes complete sense. I think the thing about the Warriors is it's easier to identify them, especially if you're a fan of a team. I mean, certainly here in Minnesota, but the Sacramento Kings, and we can get into why some of these organizations really have kind of been messed up, but the Sacramento Kings or any kind of these losing franchises. I mean, Golden State, I mean, it was a handful of years ago. Tibbs pointed this out, maybe 10-11, they won 23 games. Simmons was right. Bill Simmons wrote this huge column on like 60 steps to fix the Warriors. I know this personally just from going to school out there in the Bay Area when I was out in college. They had great fans. It still was a little bit hard to get a seat in their arena. But just like people there were just kind of like they were befuddled. It was a great fan base. It's this huge market. It's a booming area. And just kind of threw their hands up and it almost kind of like Knicks fans. And we're like, yeah, we just keep on screwing this up. I like that example because the Boston, you're just not going to be in Boston's circumstance a whole lot. The funny thing, quite literally, but almost just mentally, that went from Oakland's team to San Francisco's team. Like, they went from being treated like the A's, and maybe even the Raiders are different because they're like a national brand, but they're kind of went from being treated like the A's where they're like, yeah, you know, they're just kind of not going to win, and they're in, quote-unquote, the small market in Oakland. And then as soon as they started winning, you start seeing all these tech guys, you know what I mean? Kind of like sort of famous in those circles, guys, and they become a hot ticket, really expensive, and this and that. And it is funny how that kind of mentality changed, and now literally they're moving into the, you know, into San Francisco pretty soon here. But I don't know. Is that fair? Like, if you want to look at one team and be like, yeah, if you just kind of put the right people together, have the right kind of brain trust, you can turn it around even with a history of outside of like the 1974 NBA championship or something and Rick Barry. You know, you can put together a championship team, you know, with smart people despite the history of the franchise.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that front offices are something that get overlooked a lot, but they have a real impact on whether your team's getting built really well. Like, for example, when the Lakers were trying to acquire LaMarcus Aldridge and he was not impressed by their sales pitch at all, that's front office guys. Like, maybe Kobe came in and maybe messed it up a little bit. There's a lot of talk about behind the scenes what he was doing to free agents when they were trying to bring in guys. I'm not sure about all that, but I know that when LaMarcus Aldridge went to the Lakers, he was not impressed. And when he went to a team like the Spurs, and we all know how they're run, and how they told him how he was going to be used, how they were going to run the offense through him, what he was going to do on the defensive side, he was really impressed. And I think that other than money or market, I think for a lot of these free agents, a team's competency and how they're pursued by teams and what they say in those meetings to get the guy to go to their team, I think that matters to a lot more guys than fans think they do.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think that's huge for Durant. Durant's the prime example there, right? Where they just, I've heard him on multiple, he's been on Simmons' show now like three times, but I've heard him in other forums too, where he just says, these guys are cool guys. Like, I think that was part of the, I get that like their pitch was, you can do something, this is just like a one, again, I think fans of other teams, especially the Wolves, will go, well, this is a lot of circumstantial. Like, Boston happens to be in this, you know, history-rich market. Yeah, they went and got probably the smartest coach in the NBA, but they also had this weird circumstance where Brooklyn just was dumb, you know? And I think with Golden State, you can go, they were smart, 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 lovable. You know, it's hard not to like Curry and Clay and those guys. But they had this one opportunity where the cap jumped, like I think something like $20 million with this new TV deal. And all of a sudden, you can get Durant and have this ridiculous team. But I think it's worth pointing out, especially for teams kind of looking for hope, that they got to that point the right way. Like, they did it in a way that other teams could replicate if you really have smart people and good ownership and all that.
Yeah. Well, before we get any further down this rabbit hole, I wanted to propose to you, I think, I know it seems simple, I think there's really three ways to build a team in the NBA. A couple variations maybe, but for the most part, three ways. And I think because there's only five guys playing on the court at one time, your roster is not very deep, only 14 to 20 guys. I think it's a little simpler than when you're building an NFL team or a baseball team or a hockey team. So here's my three ways, and you can tell me what you think of this. Here's my three ways to build an NBA team. First, you got the tank way. You got 76ers. We're going to get to the bottom, just get really good draft picks, and then just hope after a while all these draft picks and these pieces that we're acquiring really hit, and we can then be a playoff team after that. Second way is, we were talking about it, building off of past success. Boston, a really good format for this, where you're using the guys who won you a championship before and got you to playoff, to the playoff appearances. You're using their success, maybe dealing them free agency or trading them out, or using them to get new free agent guys to come in and be the next guys to perform really well. And then you're pairing that with, okay, you're trading all these guys, you're making moves in free agency, so you got pieces to build around. Now you're able to make some trades, get some good draft picks, get some solid young guys through the draft. So you're kind of building from both ends and continuing that sustained success. Maybe you're not getting a ring right away, but you're a playoff team at least. And then you got the third way, and my comparison was Cleveland. There's a lot of teams to plug in here, but you're buying a team. So you have your guy that came, LeBron came back. You have your main guy, and now you're just going crazy a couple years in free agency, and you're getting all these pieces. And I know Kyrie was there before too, but you're getting all these pieces. Korver comes to mind. They got Tristan Thompson,
J.R. Smith,
to stay in free agency. J.R. Smith, Amon Shumpert was big a couple years ago for them. All of these guys, Kevin Love, they traded their draft pick away for Kevin Love. So all these guys that they got, now that they had that piece. And that's my primary three ways to build a team. What do you think?
Yeah, the one thought I had, because we talked about Boston, Golden State, is where do you put the Spurs? Are they in a league of their own? Or is that just, I guess it's just building off of past success, right?
I think they take building off of past success, and they bring it to a whole nother level. I would put them in the same class as Boston, but they're so much, their way of doing it is so much more refined just because of the guys they're able to pull off of the bench and out of the D League and make good. Like Jonathan Simmons, nobody'd heard of him, and he was actually an impactful guy in the playoffs for them this year.
Yeah.
And so they're taking guys like that, and they're making them difference makers, and they're pulling guys from all over the place and plugging them in. But even a team like that still has a guy. They still had Kawhi, Tim Duncan. They still had a guy who was their main piece that they were putting all these guys and plugging all these guys around. And I think if you don't have that person, I think that you're just kind of floundering a little bit. And I think when you talk about the Kings, the Knicks, who's the other team? Oh, the Magic. I think they're floundering a little bit because they either don't have a guy and they've been trying to draft him or acquire somebody through free agency, and their front office just isn't doing a good job finding one, or they have a guy and they're not doing a good job putting pieces around him.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think we know the teams that build off past success. You kind of have to talk about Boston, Golden State, and the Spurs, because those are just kind of the prime examples of that.
But a team like Miami is still getting to the playoffs.
Yes,
Miami's gone.
Miami's a great, and actually Eric Spoelstra, I think, gets a lot more credit now that they don't have the big three. And you just realize
that.
Look, I think people immediately think Miami's this big market, really nice. It is. I mean, especially I've been watching like the All-Star games there and stuff, and I've been out there in the past. It is. It's a very unique, very nice warm weather city. We're going to talk about the no income tax and kind of each Texas team is very interesting in how they run their program. But I think in terms of Miami, it is about the culture. Like, it's easy to go, hey, LeBron, LeBron's from Cleveland and would like to take a vacation in Miami. I think that became kind of a very simple take. They, year after year, they have figured out how to, I can look it up real quick, but I believe that Miami is actually not that big, like that big of a TV market. It's more famous than, Minnesota, Detroit. I'm trying to think of similar kind of size markets, Seattle or whatever, which should have a team. But it's not that huge of a TV market. And they run a really good program. That's building off of past success. I think generally speaking, teams, if a new regime comes in and you're not winning, and especially if you're kind of caught in just like seven seed hell, you should probably just burn it down and then, get a pick. But it's tough. You then have to build around those players. Cause you can disagree with me or if you want, but like, I just don't think the 76ers route works incredibly well because you have a lot of trouble there. You have a lot of injuries. You have a lot of players that are playing the same position, and you're probably selling your assets for less than they're worth.
Well, and the other thing, too, is you have to have the right market for it, too, because if you're trying to do that in New York, I think the media and the fans crush you after probably one or 2 years of intentional losing. And it looks like they're intentionally losing, but I don't think that they are. I think that they're just making some really bad moves. Obviously, the Jakeem Noah and Tim Hardaway deals come to mind for some of the bad moves, a pile of bad moves they made over the last couple of years. But it is really hard to take the process route and just be willing to be really, really bad and accept that you're going to disappoint fans for 4 or 5 years and try and build up your assets in a losing mentality.
Yeah, no, completely. By the way, just to be clear on this, Miami is the 16th largest market. So Minneapolis, St. Paul, 15th. Seattle, 14. Tampa, 13. Phoenix, 12. Detroit, 11. You know, the funny thing about Philadelphia, it's number four. It's a large city. And I think, you know, I wonder if that approach, like, do you think the process works better in Charlotte or something like that? You know, like, I understand that Philadelphia is not New York, but it's a big sports crazed town. Do you think that's part of the problem, or do you think it's just a flawed process? Bad word to use, but a flawed
idea. Well,
here's
the hard part, because we haven't even gotten this far yet in the process, so it's hard to tell. But when, let's just pretend that Markel Fultz's ankle is going to be fine after a month, and he and Simmons and Embiid are just amazing together, and they blow the doors off of all the expectations. So now, is it good that they've been doing it in Philadelphia because now maybe they can get free agents that a Charlotte can't? Or does that work better in Charlotte because now they're kind of tucked away and they can just be left to do their process in a smaller market and then we wait for them to hit? That's the part I'm not sure about because we haven't gotten that far. But if they do get far enough where this actually starts to work, does it work to the point where they can get free agents because they're in Philadelphia, or do free agents still stay away because they don't want to get stuck in the process if a couple guys get injured and they decide to blow it all up again?
Who knows? J.J. Redick's one guy. I mean, he seemed to be approving of it. Now, $23 million might influence that thought a little bit.
Might influence a little bit.
But, you know, it is a good question. I have two thoughts when it comes to this. First of all, do free agents value the size of the market? New York's different because New York is seen as, like, kind of the basketball mecca. It's also just, like, Hollywood East, right? I mean, it's where superstars go, right? They go LA and New York. Celebrities, I'm saying. The other East Coast markets are different. I think Boston has to kind of have something going. I think Philadelphia has to have something going. And maybe these Houstons, maybe even the Charlottes, the Dallases, the Miamis, they're smaller technically. I mean, Dallas is a huge city, but, like, you know, they're smaller technically. But maybe just the warm weather culture or climate, lack of income taxes, all that stuff, maybe is more attractive, right? You know, I even wonder if in Atlanta is, because Atlanta is kind of the hub of the South, right? You know, I just kind of, I do, I find these dynamics interesting, especially from the Minnesota angle, because it's funny that we kind of like are, we're not the best ambassadors for Minnesota, right? I mean, the best thing you can do is go walk in and say, look, there's a whole bunch of Fortune 500 companies. There's good restaurants. There is a Skyway system. You'll go in your warm, you know, I mentioned this in an article a while back, but you go from your warm garage to your warm car to a warm garage up into the stadium, right? I mean, it's not, you're going to have to deal with construction and stuff, but that's everywhere. You know, I think, and it's not like Minneapolis is just like ignorant to like the fashion scene or anything, right? It's sure, yeah, New York, but I don't know. I am curious kind of what's valued, especially as players now take over the NBA and are kind of determining where they want to go, and in some ways circumventing almost the GM and the, you know, they these guys kind of just you know, you can see it with kind of the Chris Paul Harden deal in Houston, and I think you can look at it the other way with Carmelo in New York, where you're like, what are you doing there, dude? You know, like your prime is, if you're not past your prime, it's wearing away, and you're on this really poorly run team. I mean, among the most despicable ones, because I think we have to mention this with the East and the West. The East should be good. You have Philadelphia out there. You have Chicago out there. You have New York out there. You know, like Atlanta should be good. DC probably should be good. Is it perplexing to you that you have these big sports crazed towns, and yet all the talents in the West, pretty much?
I mean, it is a little bit, but at the same time, the sports just swing back and forth.
Sure.
Years ago, the Pistons, Chicago, New York, those teams were really, really good. Philadelphia with Allen Iverson, the answer there. I mean, we see swings back and forth. Moreover, it's just there's just some really bad GMs and front offices in place in a couple of key cities, and it's more noticeable because they're in Chicago and New York as opposed to being somewhere like in Charlotte and the Kings. So I think right. You notice it more, but there's always been bad front offices and bad GMs and bad owners in every single sports league for the entirety of that they've been around. And it's just easier to notice right now because they're in some key cities. I did want to talk to you about one team in particular, and I think this team is probably the anomaly to every rebuild or trying to build a team ever. And I thought about it a lot when Boogie was traded, and then I thought about it a bunch again when I was making my list that you should check out on Zone Coverage of the grading of every team, how they did in the offseason. But the New Orleans Pelicans, again, not a huge basketball town. New Orleans, more of a football town, I would say.
Yeah.
But they have the guy that you build around, Anthony Davis. They had some pretty rough seasons where they had lower draft picks, and they weren't 76ers first picks, but they were still low draft picks. They trade pieces to get another really big piece in Boogie Cousins, and they still... It still looks like a rocky ship over there, and they just barely were able to hang on to Drew Holiday. And, I mean, they're having all sorts of trouble getting free agents in there, developing guys that they've been drafting. They traded away Buddy Hield, a younger piece, and obviously to get Boogie Cousins, it probably was worth it or it might be worth it. But at the same time, like, does that show that they aren't able to draft these new guys? I mean, what's going on with New Orleans? Why can't they build around some really good all-stars?
Yeah, I think that's a great example of a place that, like, I could look at the market size real quick. It's not huge, but it's certainly an attractive place. I would treat it kind of like Las Vegas. Like, I actually thought Las Vegas would be a better fit for a basketball team than a hockey team, because a hockey team is going to take a while to get going. There's just kind of more components to it, and the best players play a third of the game, as opposed to with Tibbs, the best players play 42 minutes. So, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe
Tibbs should coach in Las Vegas and just move the Timberwolves there and still just keep the Minnesota for the fans.
Don't suggest that. They might do it. Careful. Careful.
That's true. I'm sorry. I didn't have it. Cut it from the tape.
We'll bleep it out. It'll sound like you swore. But anyways, I just thought that would make sense, and I think you just have to treat it like Las Vegas, not a huge TV market or anything, not a huge city, but an attractive destination for a player. And I think you're right. I think, you know, it's funny that if someone, you're an alien who warps down here and someone's explaining to you basketball, you'd be like, oh, the team with, you know, Cousins and Davis has to be good, right? And yet they're not, and you kind of wonder if Cousins is a deterrent, like how many players really want to play with him. It's probably not unlike Oklahoma City, a miniature market, and like with Westbrook, you just don't know if Paul George is going to like playing with him, and you don't really know how many players will, you know? Like, you just wonder about that, and it's for different reasons. I would say Cousins more is an attitude, and Westbrook's a little bit attitude, but also just his style of play. But I'm with you. Like, you would think that New Orleans would be a very attractive place to go.
Well, And I know Boogie and Anthony Davis play the same position, but if I went back to the 80s or 90s, and I told them all of this basketball is going to change, there's going to be less fouls, you're going to shoot deeper shots, you're going to pick up the pace, we're going to score more, defense is going to be a little less important. I'm not one of those guys who thinks that the NBA doesn't play any defense. That's ludicrous. Watch an NBA game and
right.
You don't see that. That's just outrageous. But the defense is a little more lax. You definitely worry about injury more and taking care of your body, and you want to put up a ton of points on the other team. Build the center for me. I mean, Anthony Davis and Boogie Cousins are kind of the center that you would build. Their three-point shooting has, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I know Boogie's three-point shooting percentage has gone up the last 3 years. Anthony Davis is getting better from outside. Both of them can play with the ball in their hands or off ball. Both of them rebound really well and can take shots from just about everywhere on the court. And on the defensive side, they're going to do a good job on the glass. And so both these guys should be able to have success together, and you can still squeeze in a couple shooters around him. You can get in guys who can shoot from outside, guys like Klay Thompson or J.J. Redick. You can put those guys in that system, and Boogie and Anthony Davis will be able to play alongside them. So it baffles me that now this isn't a place that has success. If they don't have success, is it just a coaching staff or a front office, or is it just the market and some bad Boogie rep?
Yeah, I don't. That's a really good question. I kind of wonder if that team, because Davis is so likable, if they really kind of look at this year and go, what can we get for Boogie? And if it's assets, I mean, I wonder if Davis himself is a big enough draw. You have him locked into a contract, so it's not like you're telling a player, hey, come play with Davis, and the guy's gonna be like, well, he might be somewhere else in a few years. He's under contract. I don't know. I feel like that might be the move. I think there's always going to be, because of what you literally just outlined, there's always going to be demand for Cousins. And I wonder if you don't move him, try to get some assets and build around him that way. I don't know. I think that's probably the best deal there.
Yeah. I mean, something has to change for that team.
A couple other things, because you kind of mentioned places that should be attractive. I think... real briefly, like if I am Adam Silver and I can just flush the ownership and the organization and be like, we're starting from scratch, we'll put some smart people in here, my number one and two would be New York and Chicago. I just think Chicago should be good. I because my dad worked there and my brother lives there, I used to go to Chicago games when Tibbs was there, and kind of saw essentially what would become kind of the Timberwolves, but you know, the Taj Gibson at his best, Rose at his best, you know, kind of that team that they had there. And the NBA needs that. I mean, I just think they need Chicago to be good, or at least relevant, and maybe they're kind of relevant in a bad way. And I don't really want to pile on Hoiberg. He's quote unquote one of us, and he had a lot of success in college. But I think in terms of the structure around him, I'd do that, and I would get Dolan out of the NBA. I think it'd be so hard to do, but it's just New York should be better than they are.
Yeah, you definitely want those two places to be good, and especially if you're looking at New York and Chicago, if they're good, and then you have Boston, the way they've built up, Miami is kind of a little bit of a 7th, 8th seed scrappy team. Cleveland still has LeBron. Like, if you can clean house and get those teams to be competent, then the battle between East and West is really interesting, as opposed to just, all right, just watch the Western playoffs, because that's the team that's going to win the ring. Whoever comes out of that just gauntlet is going to be the one who takes it all.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And that's basically, you know, with the theme of this podcast, those are just really poorly run organizations. You had a few other examples here. I wanted to talk real quick, just because this is kind of an outlier. What do you think of Houston? Like, I think of where, you know, Boston probably has the smartest coach. I'm very intrigued by Daryl Morey and his prowess.
The analytics.
Yeah, the Morey ball, quote unquote. What do you think of that, both in the situation they're in with Paul, you know, and Harden, but also just kind of Morey ball in general?
I do like that they brought in Chris Paul, because it was just so interesting watching the Spurs give up the 15-foot shot and guard the three-point line the way they did, and Houston just couldn't do anything about it. They didn't have a guy for that. And I think Chris Paul is a guy who can knock down those mid-range shots and is willing to take those shots. He's not a point guard who has to pull up from three and feels like he needs to shoot from deep all the time. So I think that Mike D'Antoni is going to do a really good job staggering minutes, and that's where Chris Paul is going to be. Because if this is going to work out and they stagger minutes, that's where Chris Paul is going to be really dangerous, is when teams are kind of playing the three-point line and James Harden goes out and Chris Paul comes off the bench fresh, and for 20 minutes he's just attacking the middle of the defense, and then you have James Harden come in and just launch bombs from downtown. And that's where if this team is going to work, that's where it's going to be really interesting. As far as the market and just drawing free agents, the Rockets have kind of been a team that's been really good, had some really bad spots, been really good again. I think the analytics side is a really interesting way to attack it. And I think it has a draw for if you're have free agents coming and checking out your team. I think it is an interesting way to kind of show them how serious you are, and it's a new way of attacking basketball as opposed to the last 10 pitches that might be all the same that they've heard. I'm sure they're not all the same, but kind of the same format. And that paired with not having income tax and having a really nice city and really nice weather, I think that makes Houston a very desirable option. But that said, James Harden possessed the ball seventh most in the league after last year, and Chris Paul was the first in possessing the basketball. So that could be a little bit of a problem for them.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. It's kind of funny. Like, professional athletes tend to live down there anyways. You know what I mean? No income tax, and I think it's, you know, one of the bigger cities in the U.S. Another funny kind of example of that actually is Orlando. There's a lot of very wealthy athletes and you know, people like that who don't want to be in the New York, L.A. scene who move down there. So that's why the Magic kind of has to get it together. And Houston probably is, you know, at the very least going to be on top of the West and a very talked about team.
Yeah. All right. So now the biggest question we have to tackle, though, and we have to come to a conclusion on, is from Golden State to the 76ers, Kings, Orlando Magic, where do the Wolves rank in this rebuild? How are they doing? How do you think they're doing? What is a fair projection for them over not just like next year, but the next couple of years, how this is going to mesh, how this is going to affect their free agency and drafting? I mean, where do they stand as a rebuilding team?
I heard Zach Lowe say the Wolves kind of came into their success ass backwards. I would say this. They capitalize on their luck. You know, I think, A, you got to give Flip credit for the Wiggins trade. Hands down, you do that 100 times out of 100.
Yep.
And we're just curious how good he gets. They got lucky with Towns. Just being able to draft him, obviously, and then they chose the right guy. And having said that, I like what they've done since. You can nitpick some of these other things. I certainly hear everyone's argument, and that's probably another podcast and something we're literally going to discuss for, you know, the next entire year. You know, the Butler deal was sweet. I don't hear a lot of people who dislike that. And then I think Tibbs went and got his guys. And there is a meticulous plan here. And I think you can find flaws with the Wolves, but you can find flaws with all but one team in the West, I think. The flaw with San Antonio being their age. I got to imagine it's one of the better ones. And it's crazy. It's how I describe every other sport. Turning around your team is like turning around a yacht. Turning around a basketball team is kind of like turning around a jet ski. You know, you got to have enough motor power and stuff. But once you got that, once you got your star players, you can zip around.
And you got to be willing to put some money into it.
Yeah, and I like it. I like it under these stipulations. Towns and Wiggins start to play defense, and Glenn Taylor goes into luxury tax once they get into the playoffs. But other than that, I'm pretty bullish on the Bulls rebuild, or sorry, not the Bulls, the Wolves rebuild right now.
Yeah, I like it as well. I think another thing too is going back to Tyus Jones again. That's something you see really good organizations do, is hit late in the draft. And granted, he hasn't done a ton so far in his career, but I think he's just one of those guys who's just going to be really solid for a lot of years for the Wolves off the bench, and is just going to do a bunch of the little things for that second unit. He's going to be a guy that they can bring in when they want to play small ball with their starting five and maybe go a little smaller, slim down the starting five. He's a guy that can come off the bench and play, I think, some bigger minutes to make their lineup a little different, add a little different shade to their lineup. And it's those kind of things, even one pick or one move, it's those kind of things that successful organizations do. And I do really like how the team was very specific with what they wanted to address in this rebuild. They knew that they had the offense with Wiggins and Towns, and they wanted to address really solid defense in the offseason. And they went out and they got Teague, who's an upgraded shooter at the point guard spot but can force turnovers. They got Butler, who's just such a solid defender. When you're playing isolation basketball against Butler, he's one of the top guys in the league who you don't want to be taking a final shot against. Plays really tight on guys, does a really good job using his length against guys who are bigger than him. Even we've seen him time and time again play against guys like LeBron, who maybe are a little bit bigger and stronger than him, but he can play with them because he's using that length and he's playing smart basketball. They get Taj Gibson, somebody who can play the boards really well. So they were very specific with how they wanted to rebuild, but they also weren't sacrificing some of their offensive game as well. So they still got their shooters. They still got a Jamal Crawford who can come off the bench and put up shots. And they just went about it a very smart way. And I think when you're a good team and a good front office, that's what you do when you're rebuilding.
I agree. You had a handful of questions here, and I think we should do them rapid fire to finish up because we are going a little long here. So can you build without a superstar like LeBron to draw in other, you know, other free agents? I would say yes under a few different circumstances. A, it's a desirable market, and that's not necessarily just size, but a place players want to live. B, if you just have, you know, kind of a dynamic GM or dynamic ownership. I'm thinking Miami or maybe Houston off the top of my head, which also qualifies for places you want to live. But or you have drafted a player who people think is a generational talent, like Karl-Anthony Towns. Am I missing anything there?
I would just add to that, too. You just have to be really smart with the assets you have. So if it's draft picks that you have, you have to be really smart with how you maneuver them and deal them out or keep them. If it's like guys who could be sixth man of the year potential, kind of role player guys, like the Rockets had, if you got really smart dealing those guys out, training for other guys, moving those guys around for picks, then it can work as well.
You said how soon do your draft picks have to work out for them to work as or draw in free agents? I would say very quickly. You know, I mean, they have to have a good rookie year, and I think you can't sophomore slump too hard. By the third year, if that guy's not playing well, it's going to be really tough. So I would say very, very soon.
Yeah, you have to, I would say, 2 to 3 years, and that seems really quick to judge a young guy, but that's just the way the league is now. I mean, Towns and Wiggins, they only had a few years before the front office decided, okay, we can add pieces around these guys instead of blowing up the entire thing.
How would you rebuild, and what players would you rebuild with? I mean, Towns has to be in that conversation, hands down. The problem with LeBron is kind of his age, and just I think he's at the point where he'd want to join a Lakers team that's kind of ready to go. You know, that's the way I see it. You know, Anthony Davis, I'd put in that conversation. I'm trying to think of do you have guys off the top of your head you really like and you would build around?
I would say they have to be kind of a stretch wing kind of guy who can play the 2 through the 4 spot, or they have to be an exceptional point guard. Like, I'm not going to rebuild around any point guard, but if I have a John Wall on my roster, somebody who not only elevates guys around him, but is such a superstar scoring the ball, then I can rebuild around him. But point guards, it's tough because a lot of them, you look at Isaiah Thomas or Westbrook, a lot of those guys need a lot of shots to be successful. And so it's a little harder to rebuild around guys who are taking up a ton of shots.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I think this gets to your next question, which is in today's NBA, who do you rebuild or build around and draft, and how does that differ from 10 to 15 years ago? You kind of just answered it, but the big difference is now we're not valuing the Nikola Pekovic's are just not kind of the guys everyone thought they were. The NBA has just downsized. I think everyone kind of knows that, but it is, you know, when you look at other models around the league, by the way, you said, how would you rebuild it? I wouldn't do it that. I'd do it two ways. The ideal way is the Boston San Antonio way, the building off of past success, and you just kind of take advantage of the worst teams in the league, try to get assets, and try to hold your window open as long as you can. Absent that, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, and when you're drafting guys, the position small forward to center, it's melding more and more into one or two kind of spots as opposed to three defined different positions. And I think that affects who you're taking in free agency as well, not only who you're drafting.
Yeah, no, completely. So so I think that part people understand, but it's just you asked how would you do it, or I mean, kind of what would you do? If you're the Wolves, you can't really build off past success because that's long gone. So, the Wolves kind of did the way that they had to.
But you could argue that them drafting and starting to develop Wiggins and Towns is a little bit of past success. It's not a ton of past success, granted, but that is the first steps to building that organization, and now they're building off of it by putting in Butler and Teague and Crawford and Gibson.
Yeah, completely. Wolves, I think, still have some moves to make, going and getting wings, maybe getting another backup point guard or some depth there. you know, Tibbs knows it. He came out and said it yesterday. So that's no secret. I think it's whether or not you do it in the middle of the season or you try to, you know, get something done real quick here in the near future. Obviously, we'll be there for you when these moves go down all off season long and then really hitting it hard during the season. Colton, any final thoughts?
Absolutely. Go check out on Zone Coverage. I graded every single team off season, how they did, how I thought they could have done better. I gave them a grade. Some teams you're going to really like how I graded. Some teams you're not. Go ahead and yell at me on Twitter if you want. We can talk it out there. But go ahead and check that out. Every single team, all 30 of them. I was up a lot.
Yeah, no, it's great stuff. Obviously, check out zonecoverage.com for Wolves and other Minnesota content throughout the season. For Colton Molesky, I'm Tom Schreier. This has been Locked On, the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.